Interrobang.
I'm super stoked to have this first conversation on Interrobang with my buddy Colton Campbell. This is a pretty long episode. We get into a lot of different topics, long-winded topics, some loose threads here and there, but it's a fun conversation where we're able to reminisce and have a lot of fun, and I think you'll really enjoy it. Welcome to Interrobang with Dave DeGraw. Today I am joined by my buddy, lifelong friend. I like to think that we probably met actually like in the hospital at some point or in early childhood. But officially, if I remember right, and you're going to have to correct me here, I remember meeting you in 2007 at a tie-dye shirt-making event, and I think we decided on the spot to form a band. Is that accurate from your recollection, Colton?
I think that's absolutely accurate. I think it was, and then we were going to play a song for a school assembly.
Is that what it was?
And I think it was. We were going to play an Operation Ivy song because that was going to be...
Clark W. And then it got
right,
bumped.
Clark,
Mr. Meese was
Clark
like...
W.
Was like we were, it was like 10 minutes over and he was like, no.
Yeah.
Which is good because I don't think we had good even times. Practiced that.
No, I think we had like ran through it one time.
Kind of.
And it was... we were like, it's three chords. It'll be fine.
Did you ever... There's this movie called The Disaster Artist starring James Franco and his brother. And it's about that Tommy Wiseau guy that made that movie,
uh-huh.
The Room. You remember that or whatever? But
I am familiar with all of that. I haven't seen either movie.
Clark Wilkie is kind of, well, okay. Clark W. is kind of a disaster artist. Anyways. Like, do you remember?
You know what's funny?
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, one of the kind of the crazy things about living where I live now that is so different from where I have previously lived is, like, pretty frequently Tommy Wiseau will, like, show up in town and be like, hey, let's do a screening of my movie.
Dude, you should
and
go.
Dude, I've had tickets to go two times, and I haven't been, I think I've had to back out at the last
the
second.
Room.
So, like, it's definitely going to happen. Because, like, if you're going to see it, like, I feel like watching that and being able to, like, see him try to explain it right after with all these people
Dude,
that are, like...
he won't explain it. Like, he'll take your questions, but, like, he won't... Like, ask him how old he is, and he straight up will just, like, not... Like, the guy is freaking nuts, dude. Like, very...
Did you know what's so crazy? It's so funny you say that. And I don't mean to take this conversation in any sort of direction that you don't want to, but... Yesterday, I was watching the original 1970s Gene Wilder Willy Wonka with my child.
Yeah.
First and foremost, not a kids movie. I don't know why they let us watch that as children. The boat scene alone,
I thought
that like maybe I was just misremembering. Have you seen the original? Sorry, let's start there. Have you seen the original?
I have, but I'm trying to remember.
Gene Wilder.
The boat scene, like a kid is like drowning in the chocolate river or something. What is happening? What's the boat scene?
Oh, no. So after the child has drowned in the chocolate river, it's immediately after that. They all get in a boat to go all down the river that the child has just drowned in.
Yeah. And they're like, stop, or what's happening?
Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka... They like go into this tunnel and it like legitimately turns into like
a bad psychedelic trip. Yeah, it's like,
whoa! Like it's rainbow colors.
And they're all freaking out.
There's like, and they're like projecting clips of like insects molting out of their exoskeletons. There's literally a shot of a chicken's head being like straight up.
That's awesome.
Like it just cuts to that. Like, but Gene Wilder is at the front of this boat, just like reciting some nonsense.
Yeah, he's like going crazy. I remember that.
Everybody else in the boat,
freaking out.
Well, everybody else in the boat is just like, "Hey, get us the hell out of here!
Stop, stop!" And he's just like, right? Like he's just go. Honestly, dude, like that movie freaked me out. Like his, and especially the end, like how he goes like all super mean. Like it's just so erratic to me. Like. It was very, confusing. That's a weird movie.
And it was for sure. And it's not something that I picked up on as a kid that I definitely picked up on as now. But sorry, to bring this all back full circle to our friend of the podcast, Tommy Wiseau. he, Willy Wonka, anytime anybody asks him a question, he just straight up does not answer. Like, he'll, like, respond in French, something completely unrelated.
I need to watch this again he'll respond,
or he'll be like, all questions must be submitted in writing, and then, like, move on is another thing that he says a few times. Or if you have a question, you can call service, or the heck it is, for back in the olden days. So anyway, I think that maybe Tommy Wiseau just thinks that he's Willy Wonka, and, like, the movie is a chocolate factory.
Dude.
That might be a hot take, and I might be the first person to ever say that.
That's pretty much much what the movie is. But you should, I think you should just go in, like, not, like, you, I don't think you should watch The Disaster Artist or do any further research into it. If, like, if you have the opportunity to go to a screening, I think you should just go in blind.
Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to be, like, I haven't seen The Disaster Artist. I haven't, like, I know that the movie is bad. And not like in a way that it's supposed to be bad.
I think, like in the age of AI,
a poorly made film.
In the age of like AI generated content, like I honestly think it kind of makes more sense. Like I don't know, man. Like it's just.
I mean, if we think about like, so let's contemplate the reference material that AI has to use for whatever it is it's generating. It's not generating just blockbusters or just Spielberg or just,
it's,
you know,
do
Pixar
the
animation.
Insect molting scenes.
That's what I'm saying. It's scraping every student project that's ever been uploaded to YouTube, every claymation, stop motion, artistic something something that gets like posted as this is a movie, this is art, this is film. And so, like, when I think about that and all of the, excuse my language, just like shit that is out there that people are like, this is art. If that's what AI is also calling art and using to create art, it makes sense that it would also be a little shitty.
Chaotic. Just crazy. Yeah.
Just wild.
Yeah, man. This.
And like, we've already gotten to the point where like AI is referencing itself.
Yeah.
So like, we're already like, dead internet squared.
Dead internet
like it's
squared.
Just, or meta dead internet or whatever, however you want to phrase
yeah,
that.
So
like
the question is, where do you go for like genuine content online?
Dude, that's actually a really great question. And one that I don't super have like a ready made answer for.
Like I was actually talking to some buddies earlier today. I don't even keep up with current events. But there's a current event going on in a particular country, and they posted like the screenshot of like somebody on Twitter, like talking about something happening in this country from the perspective of somebody having like being living in this country. And there were like the community notes, and it was like, this person lives in India, like not the country that they're talking about. Like, it's a like, I don't know, dude. And I just like, it's cause yeah, you're talking about dead internet. And it's like, I don't even know about that, but like, okay. Is a matter of public record that Russia interfered with or attempted to interfere with I don't even want to call it interference. They attempted to influence the public sphere of like knowledge in the 2016 election through sock puppet accounts on social media platforms, such as Reddit, X or Twitter at the time. Like this is like a matter of like, we know that this they do this right. Like, and if we know that it happened there, we can also assume that we like everybody is doing this. So yeah, it's like, I don't know. There is some element of like, dude, it's hard. Like, how do you know? Cause even like a good YouTube creator, like you talk about sponsorships and it's like, okay, so to what extent are they expressing a genuine opinion?
No, and I absolutely agree. And I am pretty extreme in my beliefs as far as like how to determine what content is genuine and like what content is, in my opinion, not, right? And that is a big deciding factor for me is like, are you making money explicitly off of what you are sharing with me? In a way that is not directly correlated with your labor, then that means that that extra capital that you are receiving is influencing that labor, which then makes me question the motivations and the context in which like someone is presenting information.
Well, and my problem, I think, with that is, like you said, like it's like a vicious cycle. I don't know. It's extremely like firsthand experience of my life and people that I've just observed. Like as soon as there's like this obligation, like, okay, I think, what am I trying to say? I think basically money like always makes the situation worse. Like, so it's like, if I was like paying you to be here right now, then it's like, then mm-hmm. you're going to like sit here and like suck my dick to some extent. Cause I'm like paying you money to be here and sit like, or whatever you think it is that I want you to do that. I'm like, so it's like, no, dude, I just want to talk to you. So, but it's like also interesting because I have like a therapist, right? And I like, my relationship with him is 100% transactional, like in the sense that like he literally just gives me objective advice, like specifically for my life. But his only motivation in doing so is to help me because I'm paying him. Like, unless he's like some psychopath who's like, you know, trying to like, I don't know, Brian Wilson me or whatever the freak they did to him, RIP, which we need to get into. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, weird. Yeah. Like in that situation, the money gives me more confidence in his advice.
Right.
But that's because it's explicit. Like this is the trend. Like, but
it's explicit. And I think also like, it's worth remembering that like your therapist or your psychologist or your doctor or any of those things are also have a professional licensure board that they have to answer to that keeps them in check and prevents them from doing things like that.
Theoretically.
And when there are when there are people that do that, they come down on them pretty hard.
Eventually, yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like the ones that are caught are the ones that get punished, obviously.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But even
I totally agree. I totally agree. And that's like kind of my really big beef with a lot of, basically anybody who purports to be a life coach.
Yeah, dude. We got it.
Or a guru in some way that's like outside of official like licensure where there's like, where there's like protections in place for people that engage with these.
Bro, relax. Experts. I'm accredited by the BBB, the Better Business Bureau, Colton. I'm an accredited life coach by the Better Business Bureau, which is a pay to play game. Come on, give me a break.
No breaks allowed.
Come on, I printed it out and hang it on my wall and I put it in a nice frame. It looks like a degree. Doesn't that count? What's the difference?
I have a certificate on my wall that says that I'm a reverend. And I will tell you right now that that's about
you're a reverend in my heart.
I appreciate that, David. That's kind of you to say.
No, that is it is. No, I know exactly what you're talking about because it is like it's interesting because like, they want to make it look legit, so they have to make up their own things. But like, I don't know, and I never even like you experienced more of academia and like institutionalized like licensure in academia than I did. Like that's a whole world that like I don't understand.
It's a gross one for sure.
It serves a purpose, and then like life coaches are out here like setting up like independent life coach, and it's like, oh, all you have to do is like pay them $1,500 and like they mail you the thing. Yeah.
Yeah, dude, and like my real big thing, and it's a problem that I have, it's a problem that I had and have with our legal and justice system. It's a problem that I have with these life coaches and people that do things like that. Is that if you really truly believe that you possess information that would make other people's lives better, and you decide to put that behind a paywall, that makes you a bad person. Like I just don't really know any other way to like kind of rectify that. And I'm not saying that people should not be compensated for their labor. I'm not saying that like a person that there is value to knowing how to teach a thing. There is value to becoming an expert in a thing. There is value in being able to engage with people in a way that they are able to you know, take that information with them and apply it. I just have a really hard time feeling like people are able to do that when they haven't, in my opinion, done any of the work to gain those skills.
Yeah.
And that's just a grift.
Well, the interesting thing for me is like, well, I don't know, man, you can take this a lot of different ways, but like, if there is an objective truth, like, that's universal, right? Like something can be objectively true. Like, if you discover something that's objectively true, congratulations. Mm-hmm. But because it's objectively true means somebody else is going to discover it eventually if they haven't already. And so, like, to try and safeguard that and hide it, I feel like long term, it's just not going to work. Like I don't know. It's like,
sure.
I don't know.
Well, so so here's a parallel in the way that America's patent and copyright system is set up.
Okay.
So I was taught in law school that the way and the reason that we have patents set up the way that they are is most patents, unless I'm mistaken, and I very well may be, because patent law is like a whole other monster. They require you to have a hard science background in addition to like a law degree to practice that. Like, it's like gnarly. Crazy, crazy complicated. So to my best recollection, I was told that the way that we do patents and like intellectual rights and things like that in this country is that you're granted a monopoly over that idea or that information for a set amount of time. So I think like for 5 years or something is like a blanket one for just like a blanket patent that's for like an idea. You have 5 years where you have a monopoly on that idea to enact it in any way. But after that time, barring a certain set of circumstances, like most Disney. Patents expire, right? Yeah. The Mickey Mouse, there's literally, they call it Mickey Mouse legislation, that expires. So anyway, the idea is like we're supposed to promote people to want to be creative so that they know that they do have an amount of time where they own that creative content or they own that output. And they can have that time. So it's supposed to motivate people to create, but also still enable it to be available to the public at some point.
Yeah. So here's
kind of the idea there.
I guess my question is like, okay, so like, I think drugs are the one that come to mind for me. Like, you know, they come out with the brand name one, and then 5 years, 10 years later, whatever it is, they come out with a generic one and the price is like, you know, a 10th or whatever it is.
Right.
And so it's like, I don't know, like theoretically freaking Johnson & Johnson freaking chemists in North Carolina are like out here doing research on the next generation SSRI or whatever, right? Like, and they're like paying chemists to like sit here and do all this crap and like pay people to come in and like test it out and go all through the FDA and whatever the crap they have to do. So like the argument is like, well, that takes a lot of money. Like, so they need like some guarantee that like, once they come up with the formula that like somebody else can't just like, cause it's cheap to make once you figure it out. Right. So it's like, I don't know though, but then it's like, it's stupid because I'm like, I don't know. I think that's kind of dumb. Like, I think that that's an example where the private market and capitalism don't serve us very well. And like our government institutions, like, I don't know, like, I don't know, private research, like, sure. Like go for it. I don't know if you want to invent an antidepressant, but like, why is it like on the public to like subsidize the, you know, theoretical investment that you're going to make? Like, I don't know, dude. Like, it just seems like.
Right. And that's like kind of the real like kind of thorn, right? That point right there is that they can say that it costs money to do the research and to market and to create and actually manufacture. Which it does,
sure.
It does for sure. But that is subsidized by government systems, which are subsidized by tax dollars.
So it's like, right? We're already funding the research, like just.
And like when they get federal funding, like that federal funding doesn't just like come from nowhere. Like that's being subsidized by Americans. If you want to be like. The United
States of America should be a co-author. Yeah, if you want to be
very surface level. Exactly. Like the American government should have some ownership at like the very least. In my opinion, if you're going to take like federal funding and things like that. So to say that like it costs a lot of money, sure, whatever. And even if we want to take the federal funding part out of it, the fact that they use tax dollars to do those things, the fact that they use citizens to test these drugs in the first place, the fact that, you know, all of the laborers that they use to create and do the research in these things are being exploited the entire time. Even if we wanted to ignore all of that and take all of that out of the equation, whatever number that they have cannot possibly justify charging a person 500%.
Yeah, dude. Well, and also
to have access to a life-saving drug that they literally can't
get. And I think maybe that's what I think overall is, like, capitalism, I don't know, it's a useful abstraction for a finite amount of resources to some level, right? Like, given X amount, we only have 100 apples, like, some, we have to come up with some system to, like, share them equally. I don't know.
Capitalism is kind of like based on this. Capitalism works if people are empathetic.
But the problem, I think, for me is, like, the problem is that people are not. We have government, right? So it's like capitalism cannot, like, I don't know, maybe it could, but, like, as far as, like, providing roads and, like, schools for my kids and, like, the mail, like, the government, like, the government provides infrastructure for people to just do whatever the freak they want, right? They provide infrastructure. They provide airports. So if I want to fly to Hong Kong, I can fly to Hong Kong. Like, the government helps whatever Air Hong Kong. Like, they rent it from the government. I don't know how that relationship works, right? They build roads. So if I want to drive up to my mom's house, I can drive over there. You know, I pay my, like, it's a system that's all integrated. But, like, ultimately, they just provide, like, infrastructure. And I think when it comes to like yeah, you talk about, like, your basic needs, like food, water, shelter, I think it is immoral to make money off of those. So, like, including like healthcare. Like, and I'm not saying that, like, a doctor shouldn't be well compensated for their exceptional time investment and skill investment. But the doctors aren't the bad guys, dude. Like, they're never the bad guys.
No, for sure. The reason that healthcare costs as much as it does is because of insurance companies.
Yeah, dude. It's private. It's like, it's, dude, private, like, I don't know, it's, private, it's medical.
The doctor, yeah. It's not the doctors in there making their rounds on, like, their third day of, you know, an 80th cup of coffee. It's not those people.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the surgeon that is make that, you know, has to charge you.
It's the investors in the insurance company.
$1,000. Just to take the drugs to go under for the surgery, he does not set that price point, right? The people that work in the hospital do not set those price points. The problem is that we're letting the cost of our healthcare be dictated by people that profit from the cost of our healthcare.
Yeah.
And have essentially, as far as I can tell, been given carte blanche, however it's pronounced. To like do whatever they want. Yeah. And so obviously it's going to be like, well, let's make as much money as we can.
Yeah. Well, and again, like, and this is why I think, yeah, like, monopoly, again, it's like you have, like, this public, like, you have the government providing the infrastructure, and then you have, like, your economic system, whatever it is. And so it's like, you know, whenever freaking Standard Oil and all that crap and the, you know, industrial revolution, like, they became monopolies, like, absolute monopolies. And the government is like, because basically, like, I think once somebody establishes a monopoly in like a capitalist system, it's a feedback loop that just burns it. Like, it will just, like, extinguish itself. Like, it will, like, it almost feels like it's like, if there's like a runaway condition, right? It's like, oh, now you have you now establish a monopoly. You now have, like, infinite money making, like, capacity, right? So it's like, then you get $600 like pills, like, over, because it's like the formula is just like, well, like, you know. But then the problem is that doesn't work, like, because people, anyways, yeah, I don't know, it's very interesting.
It is interesting. I would, a parallel to these days is back in the day when, like, telephones were new.
You're talking about, like, Ma Bell?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Bell Telephone had a monopoly on, you know, and as a result, they were jacking people's prices up for insignificant reasons. And Congress, like, literally had to step in and be like, no, you cannot do that.
They broke them
up. So that's part of the reason. They broke up the monopoly, right? So I think as a result, it's like kind of how you and I were speaking earlier about a certain institution that ended up being our current prison system. I think that they just changed the name, and now it's like, it is a monopoly, but instead of it being one company, it's 1%. And all of these people are just doing whatever they can to keep the money
prison
in that sphere. I mean, but even just beyond that, moving on to like monopolies, like we're talking about now, like I think it's not Bell that has all of the telephones. It's 1% of our population are greedy capitalists that have control over everything. They've just diversified it enough to make it hard to pin it on any one person.
Okay, but so
especially for someone that doesn't really have the time or energy or bandwidth to like dig in and like find out where all of these lines lead to.
Yep.
You know, like it's a lot of work and it's boring as shit.
Okay, here's my question, okay? Like, so you work in a freaking Amazon warehouse in like Southern Utah, like you're pretty like in the middle of nowhere, you know, whatever. Like
this is a hypothetical. I don't actually work in a warehouse.
But I'm saying, say you do, you're like a single mom. You're working freaking 12-hour days in the Amazon warehouse. Like you're standing there, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what it's like. I, you know, you hear crap and it's like, I think at a certain point you come to work every day and you realize like, okay, who owns this building? Like, where are they? And who do I work for? Like, and I don't know, dude, I just feel like it's not that long of not that big of a step for like all of the people involved in that Amazon warehouse to literally just be like, wait a minute. Like we do everything. I don't know. Like, so well, like theoretically Jeff Bezos owns Amazon and owns that warehouse. But like when the next plague happens, they're not going to be there. Like his thing goes away. And we saw that with COVID. And it's funny when you see this too. I don't know what I was reading the other day. I was reading about like freaking Zuckerberg and something happened with Facebook. And it was like Zuckerberg's net wealth dropped by like over $1 billion in one day. Like that's how quickly their effing shiz can go away. Like, honestly, dude, that's what makes me optimistic. Like it can go away like that. And we saw it like Elon Musk, all these people, like, They own nothing. They don't own anything. They're just like, I don't know. It's not like he's like, maybe to some point, like if Jeff Bezos has like a pile of gold in his mansion, but like we'll burn the mansion down. Like, I mean, we don't even have to do it. Like the wildfires will do it, right? Like we see, I don't know. Mm-hmm. What am I trying to say? I just feel like, what is, you say they own and control everything. And I say, do they? Like they own and control the private jets, but like private jets aren't voters.
For sure. And I guess let me rephrase or let me adjust my previous statement by saying that I think that Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and anybody that is a billionaire is probably a bad person.
Yeah, dude, it's like it's unethical.
Right. I think
if there's people, if there are homeless people, dude, I'll go on the record and say, if you own property that is vacant, you are a bad, like that is unethical.
Right. So here's my adjustment to that is that I don't think that they are the problem.
The system's a problem?
I think the problem is a system and a government that creates a situation where that single mother who has to work 12 hours in a warehouse and no air conditioning in Southern Utah has no other choice than to do that if her kids want to have a place to sleep.
Yeah, dude.
If her kids want to have food. Like, the problem is, and I mean, the problem is that system then enables people like Jeff Bezos, like Elon Musk, to exploit the people that are living in poverty through no fault of their own. Dude. Right? Yep. I think we talk about the system that enables that, and that's capitalism.
Yeah.
And I think that it enables people to like play some sort of moral superiority over class systems. Like they distribute moral superiority based on a class system. Yeah. And I don't even know that people do that consciously. I think that is something that is ingrained in a lot of us from the jump.
That's why people go into debt to like have a nice car and like a Rolex, right? Because it's like this moral complex that's tied into your wealth status. If you're poor, you're like a bad person, right? You're like lazy. Yeah, exactly. You're sick. Exactly. You're disgusting. Like you can't afford a Rolex. Like that's propaganda. Like who? Like I just reject that. Like it's just like I know that people have that attitude, but for me personally, like I don't know, call it a reality distortion field, but it's just like, I reject that premise. Like, I'm just like, if you want a Rolex, that's actually cool. Like, I would actually love, if you own a Rolex, you know, like, I'd love to, like, that's interesting to me, but like, that is not a character judgment.
Yeah. I mean, I, yeah, like you said, like, there's a gajillion reasons why a person could have a Rolex.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, and like, so I just try just to approach, like, everything is like, I don't know why you do what you do, and it's not really my business, you know, as long as you're not bothering me.
I approach it like, I'm actually, like, freaking interested. Well, this is the whole reason why I'm starting this thing. Like, because I feel like an alien most of the time. Like, I watch people. Mm-hmm. I do, like, people watching. Like, and I just, I feel like I see the world, like, in a different way or something like that. Like, even a lot of times, mm-hmm. the vocabulary I use, like, I feel like I don't get my message across to most people. And so, like, yeah, dude, like, for me, it's like, there's a million reasons why you could own a Rolex. Like, I want to know, like, you know what I mean? Like, what's your Rolex?
Sure.
Like, that's like,
and I don't think there's any problem with, like, you using that as a point of connection with a person, or like a point to, like, build some sort of conversation. Like, I think that's wonderful.
Okay. So in line with that, I wrote down a couple of questions.
Okay, cool.
First question. What's your favorite color?
CC0000.
What's that? Gray?
It's red.
Oh, heck yeah.
It's red, and it's also my initials. Oh.
You know, dude, when I was a kid, I claimed red was my favorite color, and I still really like red. It's among my mm-hmm. favorite colors. But also, what kind of a red is that?
It's like a standard, not a cherry. It's a little bit darker than a cherry.
It's just
red.
Like straight up, like blood red.
Just
like
straight up red. Yeah, red. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Almost, all dude. You want to know what this is? This is the color. This is the original color of the 1993 Dodge Caravan.
You're absolutely right. That's exactly what that is. That's exactly what it is. The Red Baron of it all.
What did we figure out? What year it was?
I think we figured out it was a 97.
Dude, I'm looking at a picture of it right now. It's so sweet. And it is that color. I'm going to send it to you.
All of the color codes on my website are my initials or my favorite number.
Oh.
In some way.
You see
like
this
my
bit?
Gray. Oh, hold on, let me look at it.
Dude, they got it like in the sand dunes too.
Like we used to
you would get so grounded for this. Hypothetically.
Oh, you said it on Discord.
Sorry, yeah.
No, it's okay. Yeah, dude, I would get so grounded for that shit. You're so right.
But, like, that's the thing. And this is what I think it, like, kind of goes back to, too, is, like, I was talking to this dude.
Did you know what's crazy?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. You were talking to a dude.
I was talking to this dude. He has, like, you remember that Ford Ranger I used to have? It was, like, an 04.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Dude, me and my wife would make out in that thing, like, so bad. Like, we would always be like parked in front of our house and we'd be making out so bad that we'd like honk the horn. Like, we would do that like every time. Oops. But this guy in my neighborhood has like, I think it's like the latest year that they made that generation before they changed the body or whatever. And it's in like mint stock condition. And I was just telling him, I pointed to a Corvette, like, you know, super nice. Like, I don't even know the current Corvettes. And I was just telling him, like, I'm literally more excited to see your Ford Ranger silver in perfect condition than that Corvette. Like, that is like in this Dodge Grand Caravan. Like, if you saw this, like, I don't know, dude, I would literally
that'd
like,
be crazy.
Do you remember our mutual friend Sally? I don't know who was her, but she started like a group on Facebook back in the day called like God Bless My Eyes the Day I Saw Ford Taurus. And like, I literally think that, like, if I saw this Dodge Grand Caravan cruising down the street, I would just like think, gosh, you know, like, dude, it's such a treat just to see an awesome car like this. He's messaging me. Did he drop off?
No, that's still me. It's just secret things. Dude, and you want to know what's crazy? Speaking about making out with our partners that we ended up marrying, I was still driving that bright red Dodge Caravan when me and Bergen started dating.
Freaking.
With no air conditioning. With the front seat, I had gotten rear-ended by somebody. And so the front seat no longer stayed up on its own. So I had to wedge a cooler in the middle row between the back seat of the middle row to hold up the driver's seat.
Dude, so good.
But I kept sodas in there. I was very cool about it.
That's actually
for
sweet.
Some reason, when life even though I was driving, the bumper had like partially torn off at one point, and I had just used zip ties to like thread it back on there, like barely. I had a bright yellow hammer and sickle sticker in the back window.
Heck yeah. Dude, the zip tie bumper, that's like an OG Japanese drift car move. Like, that's legit. That's actually like that's like way legit.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm cooler than I thought.
You're way cool. That's what I mean. It's like, you don't even have to try. You're like, oh, my seat's jacked up? No problem. Cooler. Freaking drinks. Cooler. You want a freaking Coke, dude? Like, that's what I mean. I don't know. You think you can fit a cooler in a Corvette, dude? I don't think so.
No. No way. No way are you fitting a cooler in there. And no way are you fitting a whole drum kit in that backseat either.
A whole drum set. That's the thing, dude. Yeah. There's potential with a minivan.
There's no, you gotta have something like that. You're gonna be hauling band gear. Around.
It's almost like, I don't know. Yeah. It's like, you don't want to show, you got to keep some cards closer to the chest. You know, you don't want to like a minivan, like there could be anything back there. Like you could get murdered there. Your wildest fantasy could come true back there. You know, anything could happen.
So part of the reason, I mean, not really, but part of the reason I stopped driving that minivan is because the spouse or the partner that became my spouse that I was making out with all of the time lived in a neighborhood where that van did not fit in.
It was like too sketchy. And
literally, I got pulled over leaving her neighborhood at like 1 or 2 in the morning, like 3 times.
Yeah.
Just because like the van didn't look like it belonged.
You look like you're like kidnapping kids or something.
Yeah, literally. He's like, hey, and like one time they had me get my phone out.
Oh.
And dial my heart. And then he took the phone out of my hands and walked away and like talked to her on the phone to verify that that's where I had been.
It's a free country, sir.
Like, there's a whole bunch of things that I should and legally could have said no to. You know, that's a discussion for
today. Yeah, that's wild, man. It was, like, too sketchy. So what did you get to replace the Grand Caravan?
So I replaced the Grand... So
the moped!
The moped, that's right.
I remember
the moped
that,
and Bergen had a Honda Civic.
Yeah, I remember that. Dude, do you remember putting your moped... Do you remember putting... Okay, two things. Do you remember putting your moped in the back of my Ford Ranger and we took it over to get it fixed? They put, like, a new tire on?
I do. That was nice of you to drive that over for me. I do remember that.
That was no problem. I was, like, stoked to do it. Do you remember when the lady backed into your moped and, like, jacked it up and she left a note and she said... What did she say?
She said, I didn't see you parked in the shade. Like, it was my fault.
Why are you parking your moped in the shade, dude? What's wrong with you?
How dare I? And it was, like, in a parking spot. It wasn't like I had pulled up on the sidewalk or anything.
That's so funny.
It's just, like, it old.
Did you end up, like, did you, like, even do anything? Did it mess it up?
Yeah, I think she broke the taillight. And so I like went and just like got it priced and was like, just had her pay to replace it.
But then, go ahead. When
I was working before that, while I was working at Simply Mac, I don't know if you remember that, a coworker of ours by the name of Z also backed into it and had to like give me some money to get it fixed. So that thing was like just.
Like, was. Are you talking about the like Polynesian kid?
Yes.
Yeah. He's cool. Yeah.
He's cool. He's like, cool.
Oh yeah. I think I remember that. He like just gave you like a couple $100 or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like,
cause
his car was like not registered.
Technically stolen or something. Yeah.
My car was like technically stolen at that point too. So I think it was just like, we were like the sketchy nerds at Simply Mac.
I mean, listen, if you haven't driven a stolen car as your main vehicle and gotten away with it for, you know, at least a couple weeks, can you really call yourself, you know, a white American?
Yeah, dude. The problem is, it's like each day it gets worse. It doesn't get better. It's not like, oh, I made it another day. It's like, if I get caught tomorrow, it's going to be worse. I'm going to be like, you win.
The anxiety of that situation.
The risk gets higher.
Infinitely worse than any possible punishment.
Well, my situation, so the situation I was in was, it was a truck that my dad owned. And I guess it was like not paid off. And there was another vehicle that was, like, I guess collateral on the loan. I don't even know that that's possible. But so they repoed the one car after he passed away, and that, like, wasn't enough to restore the debt. So they wouldn't give me the title, and it was registered in Nevada, and I lived in Utah at the time. And the registration was expired. So it's like, I feel like driving around with an out-of-state plate already is, like, cops are, like, more likely to bug you. And then your registration's expired on top of that. It's like, dude, I think I went like close to a year. But maybe I'm just like paranoid. Like I've never actually been pulled over for my registration. I don't know. And, yeah. And it's like, and then again, it's like one of those things. So it's like, do I take the plate off? But then it's like, dude, if you like hide it, like that's even worse, right? Like legally, you're like acknowledging that you know you're doing something wrong. Like legally, you should not try to hide it if you do something illegal. Right?
Only if you get caught, right? Only if you get caught, like, they would have to catch you with that license plate, is the thing. And, I mean, like, you'd have to tell the truth also.
Yeah, I just feel like, I don't know, from a legal perspective, isn't plausible deniability, like, your best defense?
Listen, the only, like, real legal advice that I can, I mean, plausible deniability, if you're at a point where you're preemptively discussing plausible deniability... I think that eliminates your chances of having plausible deniability. I'm a little rusty, but I think if you're pre-planning plausible deniability, that kind of defeats the purpose of having any deniability.
But I mean, it's like, I don't know.
But
like
I will say,
Googling how to do a crime before you do the crime is more guilty than just doing the crime, right? Whether you thought about it or not. Is evidence. My goal is not to commit a crime. I'm just saying, like, given that I am going to commit a crime, right? Like, my registration is expired. Should I make efforts to conceal the expiration or just, like, oh, I didn't know?
I really technically cannot and shouldn't be giving any legal
There's no advice. Legal advice. Who says you're even qualified to do so? No one. I didn't say that.
I mean,
I don't take it as such.
The degree in the American Bar Association that has all of
I don't take this as such. I don't actually, otherwise. I don't know specifically who I'm technically talking to. So I don't think you can say
sure,
whatever you want.
No, for sure. It's less about, anyway. The only, like, and this is a true no matter what, it doesn't matter the situation. The only real advice that I ever have for anybody is that if you are going to commit a crime, only commit one crime at a time.
Yeah, dude. And minimize the number of active crimes.
Legitimately, the number of times that I saw people get busted because they were doing, like, one extra stupid thing.
Yep. Tail light out.
Led to the rest of the... Exactly, right? Yep. So if you're driving around in Utah, hypothetically, and you got a vape cart or whatever, or something that you should not have, and you're like... In my opinion, like, you know, you're making the choice to commit that crime, and that is your decision. I would advise you to make sure that, like, any other visible crimes that you could possibly be committing that could draw attention to you should not be happening.
Yeah, dude.
So you should have your car registered. You know, that's, like, really, and, like, the number of people whose, like, lives would be so much better if they just stick to one stupid thing at a time.
Well, make sure, like, that's it's funny because you bring that up, because I recently I added some tint to my vehicle, right? I drive an old 1994 vehicle, and I replaced some of the glass, and I just wanted to tint it because it's so hot here, you know, and like that heat coming in on the dashboard. And so right. one of the options is to like just add this like very mild, like I don't even, it's like not even technically tint, but it's like a UV resistant film to the front windshield. Mm-hmm. And
okay.
that is technically not legal, right?
Okay.
And literally that's exactly what I said to the dude. It's like, look, it's not that I like care that it's like, it's not even that big of a deal, right? But it's like, I just want to minimize the number of illegal, like, so it's like, not even like you're talking about a vape car, but it's like, dude, even the speeding, right? Like speeding with one yeah. headlight is worse than speeding with two head. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's just one of those, yeah. like one more reason, right? Like for a cop to pull me over for whatever reason. And again, it's mm-hmm. like, there's a lot of things you can say to a cop and whatever. And pretty much all of them are going to make your day worse. Like if the cop wants to make your day worse, it's pretty much, they can ruin at least one of your days, probably a couple, right? Like, so I don't know, dude, it's just like the goal there is True. Just to minimize yeah, I mean, interaction. Also, like just
for sure. And there are things that you can do to like, even if they ruin your day, anything that they, like there are things that you can do to ensure that anything they do against your will is not usable.
Yeah, but like even then it's like, so it's like you got these guys who are like, I'm recording this, and it's like, dude, like ideally I want this guy to like say as few words to me as possible, and like if he's gonna give me a ticket, like just come to the, like basically if I get pulled over by a cop, my goal is like I just want to not be pulled over by the cop as soon as possible. So like if that mm-hmm. if that includes like he's gonna give me a ticket, like I just, it's like, let's just go, right? Like move on with my day kind of thing. Like, so it's like, that's why, yeah, dude, I don't know. It sucks. I don't know. There are those like crazy guys out there, you know, the auditors or whatever that like go film cops and stuff. And like, I can see how freaking annoying that would be as just like a regular Joe policeman. And as a regular Joe guy, I think it's kind of annoying, but I also like as a regular Joe guy, like kind of think it's cool. Like, I'm glad that there are people that are like, that do challenge cops on their authority. Like, and maybe that's a position of my privilege, right? That like, I feel like I can just be quiet and get, and like get on with my day, and other people don't have that privilege. Like that's totally possible. But I guess what I mean to say is like, I'm just glad that there are people fighting that battle. Like, cause I feel mm-hmm. like I'm not cool enough. I'm yeah. just like, yeah, like I just, yeah, I can't, I just want to, I'm too scared of cops, man.
So that's okay. I mean, I think it's worth noting that you're scared of cops. I'm pretty anti-police. I'm pretty open about
anti-police. What's the history of like policing in the United States? Like what is like, Alexander Hamilton was the first guy to like basically start, like have a standing army. Like, he like convinced John Adams to do that. But as far as like local police force, like do you know? What even is that?
So I do know it's not great. There is a song by an incredible rapper by the name of KRS-One.
Sick.
That is called "Sound of Da Police," and that's how it is spelled. I'm not trying to appropriate anything. That's how it's spelled. Yes, but in that song, he kind of goes through a very like quick summary of how modern policemen are really an extension of the people that used to enforce plantations.
Yeah.
Like legitimately. And then when plantations went away, they became law enforcement. And I want to say that like, even like our earliest police forces are like straight up like
posses, the KKK basically.
Yeah. Gun.
Well, club. That's Rage Against the Machine, bro. Right.
That's some what I'm of saying. Those, so yeah. I mean the origins of our police are not great. I'm like I said, I'm anti cop, anti prison. Both of those.
Yeah, dude. Especially the
abolished, like, and we would be fine.
I was talking to my buddy, he was like, did you know that like, I don't know if this is true. He was like, did you know that like LAPD cops like moonlight on the side is like private security for private like rich people like in uniform?
Yeah, most cops do.
You can like literally just like hire cops.
I think a lot of cops do that. Yeah, they literally will do that, and they go and they're out of uniform, but they're cops there to be like enforcers.
Yeah, so here's my radical.
I don't even know that I necessarily have like a problem with that. Like a person's got to make money to like make ends meet. I totally get that. I have a problem with policing.
Yeah, dude.
as a career, yeah, as a job.
Well, just the way we do it, dude.
The role that people play.
I can tell you, I've been to Tokyo. Like, they have cops. Like, they're just guys. Uh-huh. Like, they wear, like, white gloves and, like, loose-fitting, like, shirts. They don't carry weapons.
Right.
There's public safety officers. And I'm sure that Japan has commandos, right, that'll come kick your door down or whatever. Like, at some point, right? Like, but I don't know. Like, dude. Okay, look, dude. I don't like guns. I've never have liked guns. I get uncomfortable seeing guns, being around guns, knowing that somebody has a gun. So when I'm in a restaurant or just like driving my car and I get pulled over and somebody, and I know the other guy has a gun, it makes me uncomfortable, right? So when a cop walks in and has a gun, when I see his gun, like, I think the cops should not have guns. Like,
right.
I don't know, dude.
For sure, dude. And I think that like a firearm being present on a person in a public setting like that communicates how that person views the public setting.
Yeah, dude. It's and not, so it doesn't make it more like, safe. It says person, like, we need a gun. Right?
No, that says to me, this person thinks that this restaurant is dangerous.
Yeah, dude. That's the implication.
And that makes me uncomfortable that that's the kind of person that would think and is looking maybe for something to happen that would make this a dangerous situation. Like, that says more to me about, and that's, but I get the same feelings of anxiety when I see that.
Now, for what it's worth, I should say, you know, like, personally, my interactions with local cops has been fine. And for what it's worth, like, I've personally, like, my family's gone through crazy crap where the cops have been involved. And, like, like, it's not glamorous, you know, like, they're dealing with shiz and screaming ladies or whatever the crap. Like, I think that there is a good element of public service, but like, dude, especially like the stuff that makes me super uncomfortable is like, yeah, the big police forces, like the bigger, I think the more corrupt they are. Like, I don't know, again, like NYPD, LAPD, maybe in Chicago to some extent. And again, in the South, like, well, the South is different. Okay. Like, I think what it is for me is like the city is like, it's almost like straight up just like mob, like mafia. Whereas like maybe in the South, like I was in Kentucky for a while and there's like basically like just one cop for like the county and they can just like kind of do whatever they want. Like there's a sheriff and like, it's like interesting. There were like these like activist sheriffs out there that would like make like, there was, it was actually interesting in the place I was in the county. I was middle of nowhere. Like nobody's ever heard of this place, but their sheriff like got national attention for like, I think it was like some Obama era, like immigration policy that he was like, I will not enforce this, or I don't know. Like, so anyways, like these sheriffs like just have a ton of power. So I can see what you're saying. It's just, yeah, okay. Here's my radical idea. Okay. I don't know if I've talked to you about this, but like, I love the United States Postal Service like a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that they should basically be the public safety officers. Like, I think
you should arm postal workers.
Well, no, dude, disarm cops and turn them into postal workers. And
disarm cops, arm postal workers. I think that
they don't have guns. Well, there is a law enforcement arm of the Postal Service, but and they do have guns. But like,
they have bear spray.
But basic things here's a crazy idea, right? I think that every like US citizen, American or whatever that lives here, like if you are like, you're entitled to receive mail, right? At a, like an address. I think that you should also be entitled to receive that mail physically at your door. Like we should have enough time and resources to pay letter carriers to knock on your door if you request that. Because I think like, I live in a community where there's a lot of old people that really get no outside contact. And like, just like the physical well-being check of like, see, and then again, it's like, I, in my radical fantasy world, these people will be like trained like first aid medical responders, maybe even trained in like mental health well-being kind of thing, right? Like just like a wellness check. I don't know, like I think if we just like implement like basic policies like this, like literally a guy showing up to your door every day and just saying hi for like 5 minutes, I think we would see a transformation in society. Like people would, yeah. I think a lot of people are very disconnected.
The idea of a person showing up at my door and wanting to chat for 5 minutes every day makes me want to kill myself.
If you request it, dude, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
It's not mandatory, dude. Nobody's like showing up, but like I'm saying, like senior citizens, like they already do like Meals on Wheels and stuff like that. Like, yeah. But again, like,
I have some very probably extreme and not very kind thoughts about senior citizens and their role in our society. And I don't mean to, I'm not saying like kill all the old
people. Yeah, but
that's
dude,
definitely that. I don't want to
they grew up like that. That's they're like thing. They grew up like inhaling lead.
And I am not disagreeing with that. I understand that
it doesn't excuse it, but it helps me understand it.
For sure. But I also like they shouldn't be the person making our laws.
Dude, that's just how it works, though. Like, they're just old people.
It doesn't, but I'm just, according to who? Says who?
This is how we do
it. It does not happen.
You can run, dude. No, that's what I'm saying. You should run. Like, try it.
And then this comes back to the capitalism thing, because the capitalists only want to give the old people the money because the old people think that they're going to die soon, so they don't care anyway, so they're just taking money on the way out.
Dude, I wonder. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, if you believe in like some sort of afterlife and you like money, like you are ready to be like an old politician, because you're just like, I'm doing what I got to do to check those boxes and then I'm outie. Good luck, everybody else.
Old rich politicians. I wonder how rich. So. You don't think that we should make postal workers cops?
I think that we need to definitely prioritize our mailing systems, our postal service systems, including mail-in ballots, mail-in voting. I think that that is a way to get people to...
Hear me out. By the way...
Engage socially...
As part of this,
and
tied into what you're saying right now, as part of this, the United States Postal Service also becomes the de facto public internet service provider nationwide for everybody. So, like, you used to have a mailbox in front of your house. Now you have a mailbox, but it's a digital communications box that provides your house with internet. And it might even have basic, like, video. Like, I'm just thinking, like, everybody needs to be able to call 911, you know, like that kind of a thing. Like you might have like basic communicate, but like everybody just gets that for free. Like, so yeah, you talk about like being connected with people. That's part of it. It'll probably include an email address for everybody as well. Like anyways, go ahead.
And I was just going to say that we could probably do away with police altogether and replace those people
with
mental health and like community specific you know, and I get in a lot of trouble when I say this, and that's okay, because I don't have like a whole bunch of friends anyway, but I just like to highlight for people that, and I don't mean to say this in a intellectual elitist sort of way, or is like in any way to say that one thing is better than the other. I just say this to illustrate that in order for me to become a lawyer to argue about the application of our laws to people, I had to go to high school, I had to get an undergraduate degree, and then I had to do an additional special graduate degree that was specific to that, just to talk about hypothetical and how they apply to people. Police, who we ask to enforce these same laws, have to have a GED and like pass in most situations like a very easy, not super, you know, they don't have to know the laws like verbatim, or like they don't have, like they have to know how to do their job and only their job, which is, again, we're asking them to like take a gun and enforce these laws.
That's interesting. That's a really interesting point.
That just seems crazy to me that they receive so much less training, but they're the people that we are like, here's a gun, go make sure people are staying.
Okay. So here's my, question. Cause this is kind of unrelated, but I was watching this guy. He's like, claims to be like a licensed pharmacist on YouTube. And he had this video where he went into Dollar Tree and he bought like all the medication, like all just the random, like, you know, Tylenol and whatever. And he was just like reviewing them. Like, what is this good for? Should you buy this? And like a lot of them were just like, it was like very, very useful advice. Like, you can save a ton of money buying basic over the counter medications. You can save a ton of money by preventing, you know, yourself from going to the doctor by knowing about and using basic over the counter medications. Like, just very useful. Right. But then it was interesting because he had this other video, I'll send it to you, where he was like, I'm going to fix the American healthcare system in 8 minutes. And one of the things he said was part of the problem is like pharmacies and it's like too complicated. And he had this system where he was going to replace it where basically the pharmacy techs, like they don't really know anything. They are just very, very, very trained to like know how to do their job, right? Like executing like, oh, we got this order for this prescription, like counting it out, whatever, filling the bottle. Like they don't need to know about like what those pills are, what they do. Like they just need to know how to execute it very well, right? But the pharmacist is like this guy or this person who they are like kind of in the background almost, like, you know, doing this. They don't really need to be at the pharmacy level. Like that's just, it's a dispensary, right? Like it doesn't. And it's actually interesting because the system he described is like exactly the medical cannabis system in Utah, where you just have an endorsement and then you go to the dispensary. They have their own pharmacist guy there, but it's really up to you and your doctor. Like, you know, like anyways. So when you're talking about that is like interesting because like, it sounds like part of the problem is that we let police officers who are untrained in the law basically be the enforcement of the law. And even if like long-term they battle it out in court, right? And like the cops are wrong, like people still sit in prison for 10 years, whatever, right? Like 50 years. Like there is like gross injustice, right?
Also, it's basically impossible for a cop to get in trouble for doing
anything. Yeah, yeah. So it's like there's gross injustices like every step of the way. And so my question is like, well, like cops maybe should do, like if they didn't have guns, right? Like take away their guns first of all. And I think you would change the demographic of cops. Like they're like, oh, they'll quit. And it's like, I think a lot of them probably would quit, but I think other people probably would apply. Like I don't want to carry a gun around, dude. Like, but I kind of want to be a cop. You know what I'm saying? Like I want to help people. I want to be like a crossing guard and like go to the elementary school and like actually help people. You know what I mean? Like the cop on Mr. Rogers. I want to, and like, I think that that's possible. Like, I mean, obviously it's a freaking like almost ignorantly stark contrast compared to the situation that we, you know, the reality that we live in. But like for me, just as an individual, like that's the kind of cop I want to be. And I think a lot of people are like that, but I don't know, dude, if we give them guns, anyways, I think that would really help. Take away their guns. They can have a gun in the car. Yeah. Just don't have it on your belt, dude.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think that's a good start. I think that there are definitely, and I think there are currently people who become police officers for altruistic reasons.
Yeah.
Who have the best of intentions.
But it definitely incentivizes you know, people who are incentivized by positions of power are typically not people that you want in those positions, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. And I think that this thing, I mean, even you take away a gun, we're still asking people to make judgments on whether or not people's behavior is correct in a public setting.
Yeah.
And I think that that is like, that's a very kind of...
Is that a trainable skill?
Severe step. I think it is, but it's like, that's a therapist.
Yeah.
That is, you know, I think that it is, but I think that it's like, that's not a cop.
Yeah.
That's not whatever our current version of
cop. Yeah. So we basically, we take away their guns and spend that budget on like hiring. Yeah. Yeah. That, that's cool, man. And I think there are a lot of people that go to school, get a degree in psychology, English, whatever it is. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a government job, dude. Like, you know, you get good benefits. It's a good steady gig, you know, it's like a 9-to-5 type of thing. Well, I don't know. I guess if you were like a cop on patrol, maybe you wouldn't. But I mean, there are a lot of like there are a lot of good reasons to want to be a cop, right? Like just like objectively, like from a career or whatever, like it's just a stable job. But yeah, dude, if we that's cool, man. I really like that idea. That would be basically it's like we're saying cops would be social workers. And I think that that's what I'm also saying that I want your mailman to be. I want like every mailman to be a licensed social worker. And then maybe on top of that, like, yeah, again, I'm talking, you know, I talked about like the experiences my family had directly calling the cops to family drama and stuff like that. And I can, I can guarantee you a licensed, you know, clinical family social worker, would have been more effective. Not that the cops weren't, you know, necessarily effective, but that would have been better. And I think that's probably almost always true.
Yeah, for sure. I think that there's very few instances. I don't want to say, well, and part of the problem is that we don't have, it's hard to study the effects of policing. They've made it very hard for people to gather any sort of data for any of that, which is part of the problem.
Yeah.
I would guess that the number of incidents that actually require some sort of physical force to take place, I would say, just based on what I have seen, and like you said, like this is just anecdotal, this is based on my lived in experience, I would say probably 98% of those conflicts that end up in needing physical force had infinite opportunities for de-escalation to not get to that point if the right person with the right tools was there to do that.
Actually, I mean, I actually subscribe to this like fanatical Tolstoy Christian anarchism theology, like to some extent, and they're basically pacifists. Like, so it's like, I like, they believe explicitly that like there is literally never any justification for violence ever, like including to like prevent violence against yourself, like Quaker or whatever they want to call that. Pretty interesting, right? Like, and I agree. Like, and especially when you talk, when you talk about like, dude, I don't know. That's why it's like, you should have a gun to protect your family. And it's like, dude, I think I'd rather just, I think I'd rather just not kill somebody.
For sure. And that, to be honest with you, like that, I also, hold on, let me start there. I also would rather not kill somebody. That's not on my list of like
even if somebody wants to hurt me, it's like, so be it. But like, I like, if I hurt you too, then that's just like two people are now hurt. Like, so you can hurt me.
Yeah. I don't know. My thing is I skew probably a little bit more the other way to where I don't have an issue with violence as a form of self-preservation or self-defense or in the defense of other people experiencing violence who cannot stop that violence.
Yeah.
And I get that that's like radical-ish to say.
Well, not really, but like,
For like a progressive liberal snowflake.
Well,
you know, but I also think that given current climate, we're going to find a lot of people that are starting to feel very sick.
Very what?
So they're going to start to realize that they feel pretty similarly.
It's similarly to what?
To whether or not violence is an answer.
Oh, like people are going to get more violent?
I think that the potential for the situation to be escalated into increased violence is there. And I think that like if a person is having violence enacted upon them, in my opinion, it's unreasonable to ask that person to be nonviolent.
I think that's fair. Like basically, because it becomes like a moral versus, if I chop your hand off, if I, you know, blow your hand off somehow, then the fair penalty for that is, well, I don't know, maybe there's punitive damages too, right? We have like a legal system. They probably wouldn't chop my hand off, but like theoretically.
No, but you would have to compensate me until I was legally made whole, is how they justify that. They say, you can't give me my hand back, so you will make me legally whole, either through compensation or through paying for going to jail.
And so that's like, this like universal law of justice, right? Like theoretically, like our laws are predicated upon like the Constitution, which is like predicated upon the belief that like power of authority over men comes from men and not from like their divine creator, not from kings and all this crap, right? Like, so theoretically, like the power, if I blow your hand off, the power for the court to like restore those damages or whatever, it is literally my power as well as your power, right? And all of our power combined, like, and applied in a specific way that we deem to be just, right? Is that
okay? And, are you asking if that's,
well, is that like,
that's what the deal is?
Yeah, that's like justice basically, right? But I think that there's like, I guess it, like the question is like, is there a higher moral law than justice? Like, is it just, or like justice does not forgive, does it? It's not required to. But I believe that forgiveness is essential to like productive human life.
Dude, and I think that that's fair for you to feel that way. I don't think that there, and I don't think the, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a person that said that you should not feel that way. My thing is, and I understand that I'm in the minority here, I draw a distinction between ethics and morals.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Yeah, that's like, what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
I have no problem with a person, an individual, prescribing to their own set of moral laws. I have no problem with that. I have a problem when a person's moral laws try to get passed off as ethical or as a law that should be applicable to everybody or is in some way better or more beneficial than something that works for somebody else.
The issue with that, understand, though, those people are just
I mean, and I understand that you feel that way, David, but they're saying the same thing about you, bud.
Well, I know, but like,
because like, dude, listen,
any fascist regime is based upon this belief. Okay, go ahead. Actually, that was like, my question. I actually wrote this down.
Go ahead.
Do you believe in God?
Do I believe in God?
Yes.
No, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in any sort of higher power. I don't believe in anything that anybody could probably define as like mystical.
Do you believe in? Do you believe in like a universe, like the laws of nature? Like, is that like anything, or just like
what would you consider a law of nature?
Like gravity.
Yeah, things that are scientifically verifiable.
What about like black holes, though? It's like things we like don't fully understand, and like the Big Bang theory and crap like that. It's like, well, the Big Bang started, but like we don't really know what started that.
So like, here's my kind of blanket position on many of those things is, I don't have the answers. Nobody has the answers.
Yeah.
Guessing the answer is not helping anybody. I'm open to hearing evidence that might point towards a potential answer. I'm open to seeing how things play out. But I think things like a black hole or things like time travel, things like that, I'm not saying that they're not scientifically and logistically, physically possible. I'm just saying that, like, I don't see a reason to say that I should believe in them when no one has given me any evidence to do so.
Oh, interesting. That's cool.
You know, so, and you know, we could get as into it as you want to, we don't have to. But that's like kind of my big thing with the whole moral argument thing is like, I don't believe in a God. I don't believe that there is some higher authority that is keeping score of how we conduct ourselves. I think that we have this planet and the things that we are doing here, you know, whatever happens to our consciousness, if that is a transitive property that can move from one state of elemental being into another, I don't know that. So I'm not going to guess on that. I only know what I can, what I know.
What's the Modest Mouse song? The third planet is sure that they're being watched by an eye in the sky.
They can't be stopped. But when they get to the promised land, they're going to shake the eye's hand.
Yeah, man.
That's a great song. That's a good song.
I think I agree with that because it's like, what? Yeah. I think I don't disagree with you at all on that. Like, this life is what we have. Like, this is it, basically. It's not like it, but like, this is the only life we have. This is the only time we're going to be able to do this. And so it's like, it's not like, yeah, like, this is it.
You know? And I agree. And I, again, I don't have any real issue with like an individual's belief in anything. Like, you could believe in God, you can believe in gods, you can believe in Mother Nature, you can believe in Mother Earth as Gaia. You can believe,
so what, like, but so what's your personal, like what, like, how do you measure a man, you know, like, for your personal philosophy?
My personal philosophy,
like, I guess at the end of your life, when you're on your deathbed and you look back on your life and you feel like, man, I've had a good life, it's been great, like, what kind of things have happened? All right, and I guess we get to look back on the things that, the good things that have happened already, you know, like, what are the good things, and sure, like, what are the things you're most proud of?
So, I mean, I think that that's, like, up to each person.
Yeah,
I
for you.
Some people do. For me personally, I have decided that my measure of success is how well I leave the world behind me for the people that I care about. That's all that I care about. I am not going to be here to see my daughter grow old and have grandchildren. I am not going to be here to experience all of those things that she's going to experience after I have left. I'm not going to witness those things. I'm not going to see them in any capacity, according to my belief system.
Yeah.
So all that I can do, and in my opinion, the best thing that I can do, is create an environment where she and the other people I care about, I'm just using her as an example, are able to thrive and be successful when I am not here, and that hopefully they have some good memories of me, and that hopefully they carry things that I have imparted with them forward, and that that is like, that's like my idea of like living forever,
yeah,
is being able to impart an environment or some knowledge or even a feeling. Like, if my daughter, if I die and my daughter, the only thing that she knows is that, like, I loved her and I did my fucking best, like, yeah, I'll be fine. That's it. That's all I need, legitimately.
I, like,
but there's a whole bunch of things that I would also like to have happen, but at the end of the day, like, that's how I am going to measure my success, is whether or not the people around me know how I felt about them and that I was willing and tried to do everything.
Yeah, dude. I think, like, kind of like, are you basically talking about like your posterity kind of thing? Not, and we say like posterity, and that might be biological, but it might also just be like, yeah, people.
For, I mean, for sure, I'm for sure including posterity, but I'm also including like,
yeah,
like my community.
Yeah, exactly.
Like doing things like my friends and my family, and like doing what I can to help them navigate whatever it is that they are going to, participating in, you know, like these protests, I feel like are like really important, and those are things that are, in my, you know, possible naivete, hopeful, are going to lead towards a better future.
Yeah, dude.
Right? So I feel like me participating in those things, like, that's the shit that makes me feel successful.
I remember growing up, dude, like, growing up, you hear about civil rights and you hear how they like cured racism or whatever, and you would hear about the marches, and I was just like, that is so freaking cool. Like, I remember I had this substitute teacher in sixth grade. He was like this old Jewish guy, and he told me that he had like been to some of those marches back in the day, and like, it just blew my, like, I thought it was so freaking cool. So yeah, dude, I think it's cool. Like,
people
been doing that in America since longer than America existed. That's like half the reason why we exist. So you can do that.
For sure. Exactly.
I think it's rad.
I had a law school professor whose parents survived the Holocaust.
That's crazy.
And so he would talk about that, and like seeing his family members and the community react to learning about the like the real details of the Holocaust. And like you're saying, like, it's just like there's knowledge, there's information, there's things there to be shared that can enrich everybody's lives. We just have to like seek it out, yeah, and cultivate.
Okay, so here's my question. Oh, well, I have two. So your family history, you guys come from Scotland? Ireland?
Yes. Scotland and I both, yeah.
So when you put on a freaking kilt and play guitar on stage, do you not feel like there's like 100, like 15 grandpas somewhere down the line that like, I don't know, like, don't you think that like, you know, Campbell Sr., the 15th or whatever, out in like Scotland put on his kilt and was like, hell yeah. And like you put on that kilt and you're like, hell yeah. Like,
well, so like, I hear what you're saying and I absolutely understand like that feeling, right? I have that feeling, but I don't prescribe that feeling to my ancestors are watching me. I prescribe that to this feeling of, isn't it kind of cool and crazy that biologically, yeah, I have had an uninterrupted genetic, yeah, line from whatever, yeah, to here, and that there is a piece, legitimately, scientifically, irrefutably, evidence-based practice I can see in my DNA, in the way that my body is put together, in the way that I play this music on this stage. I can find things that are traces of those people.
That's crazy.
In myself, right? Yeah. And I, for me, there is a really big part of me that feels like that is infinitely more powerful because that is tangible.
Yes.
And that is like, I can prove that that's true. I have a harder time proving that my great, great Duke Lord Campbell the 13th is watching me from, yeah, his ghostly throne. You know what I mean?
100% agree with you, dude. I
have the same feeling. I have the same feeling, and I think that people experience those same feelings. I just think that because of our belief systems, because of the context of the in which we grew up in, because of the way that we learn to articulate what those feelings mean, that they sometimes get prescribed to mystical or supernatural or spiritual means, when the reality is like there's actually a very logical and scientific based reason for feeling the way that you are. And it's actually, in my nerdy ass opinion, pretty freaking cool.
I agree, because I think that like, well, and for a long time we didn't know about this stuff, right? Like we didn't know about DNA and we didn't know how generations were linked together. Like we just didn't know. For most of the time we didn't know. Like, when did Watson and Crick discover DNA? You know, like it wasn't that long ago.
Exactly.
And so it's like, yeah, you're saying like you like, that's what I'm saying. You like putting on a kilt because you like, you are your grandpa. Like there's some chunk.
Right.
Like,
that's the thing, right? And I don't think that like we, like, I think that human beings, we are a storytelling people, right?
Yeah.
We survive, we learn, we pass down knowledge through stories,
yeah,
through songs, through art, through our clothing, through the things, through our rituals, the things that we do. 100%. Right?
Our culture.
And I don't think, right? And I think that just because I might have a different understanding of what those rituals or that clothing or what those feelings mean, I don't think that that negates it or negates anybody else that feels the same way for whatever reason they feel.
Because, right?
Like, if you feel like your grandpa is in the back of that auditorium cheering you on, I am not going to be the person to sit here and be like, no, you're crazy. That's a crazy thing to say.
Your grandpa, right? Probably, because thought his grandpa was in the back of the auditorium, you know?
Dude, that's what I'm saying. And you know what? If that's real to you,
sure,
that's not up to me tell you what is.
Good for you.
That's not my job.
But
if you want to ask me what I think is real, I'll share. But I'm not out here to burst anyone's, like, your reality is your reality. And as long as that doesn't hurt anybody else, like, feel free.
Yeah, I think the religion thing is a useful abstraction. I think it continues to be for a lot of people. But I definitely vibe with it. Like, I mean, it's just accurate, and it's very, dude. Yeah, it just gets perplexing. Like, and it's interesting. Well, it's like, one person can have a big impact on a lot of generations, depending on individual choices that they make, right? Like, even though, like,
right,
there is nature good versus nurture, but it's like, if I decide to go, like, I mean, yeah, I could, like, abandon my family right now. It's like, that would vastly change the, like, generations, right? Right? Like,
but I mean, like, even decisions we've already made, like the number of kids that you have had, like, that is going to have,
that's crazy,
socio-economical,
okay, so here's my question. Okay, so
not in a bad way, let me clarify. That's life.
How do you connect with your ancestors then? And also, how do you expect your ancestors to connect with you? Like, would you like to know if your great, 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 great grandpa liked wearing a kilt? And if you would like to know that, how would you like to find that out?
Excuse me. Good question. Do I want to
know? Do you want your great, 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 great grandkids to know that you freaking rocked out with a kilt on? Like, that's kind of cool. You want to see, do you want your daughter, do you want your kids to know about it?
So I do, but I want to be careful because I don't know how much of that is my ego. I don't know how much of that is my sense of preservation and wanting to create an unrealistic expectation.
Well, I don't know. It's just like
something I have no control over. I am not going to have any control over how my daughter or my grandchildren or my great grandchildren perceive me or the things they know or do not know about me. Like, ultimately, I have no say.
Well, you do. What parts of me, that's my question.
That's just a difference in belief systems, I think.
Because that's why, like, that's why I'm starting this podcast. Like, that's why I blog incessantly. Because, sure. Like, I can't control how they're going to perceive it. But, like, I don't know, dude. I feel like if my great-great-great-grandpa, like, I don't know what they did. Like, I don't know what they did. But if he had, like, some recording and I could listen to it, I might. Like, I might. Like, I guess
for sure.
Having that option.
And I think that there's total value there. There's total merit in, like, learning things from, like, our direct past. Like, I don't disagree with that at all. I just also think that, like, they were a lot dumber than we think.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's interesting to think about, isn't it? How do you connect to your ancestors?
Not to say that this ancestor was dumb. I don't mean to say that.
They had limited knowledge.
Right after saying that. And I don't mean to say that about this ancestor at all. But I have an ancestor who allegedly, according to the family genealogy research that's been shown to me, was present during some semi-significant spiritual events in a formative church leader's life.
Really?
Was present, yes. Was present. And when those events were talked about in this person's book of scripture, my great-great-great-great-grandpa was the person that I'm told wrote it down, dictated.
Really?
Was the scribe for it. And as someone who grew up in that same religious organization who now has changed their perspective on all of that, I will say that, like, my perspective on my grandfather, for better or worse, changed with it.
Interesting.
Right. And so I think, like, we can do everything we can to, like, you're writing these blog posts, you know, because you want to be as articulate as possible. And I think that that is an excellent idea. And I don't mean to say that that's not worth doing, but I think you don't know who you're writing that for.
Yeah, I don't.
You know, you could be writing that for your grandchildren, could be a completely different ethnicity.
Yeah.
With a completely different life experience than you have ever lived.
But they wouldn't relate
to the things that you say. For sure. And that's what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do it. I think that that's an excellent idea and I think it's worth doing. I am of the opinion that, like, I am not going to be able to dictate how future generations perceive me. All I can do is what I can do while I am here and hope that I'm going to remember fondly, but also the kind of stoic practice is just remembering that, like, once I'm dead, it doesn't matter because I won't know what people think of me. I won't know what people feel about me. I won't know any of that because I will be dead and cease to exist. So all of those things at the end of the day, like, I would like them to be true, but it does not matter because even if they are not true, I will not know because I will not be.
That's interesting to think about. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Don't get me wrong. That's depressing as fuck to say. I don't mean, like, I get that that is not
Let me ask you this.
But that is,
do you believe in free will?
I do, to an extent, for sure. I think that we all have the capacity to make choices. I think the choices that we think we are presented are less autonomous than we think they are. But I do think to a degree we do have free will.
Like, do you think you could have done something differently?
In what way?
Like, I don't know. What shirt did you wear this morning? Do you think you could have worn a different one?
Sure.
Did you?
Yeah. No.
How do you know that you could have?
Because I have recollection of past times when I have decided which shirt to wear.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm saying this morning. Like, how do you know that this morning you could have picked out a different shirt because you didn't?
And so you're saying that because I can't say with a surety that I would have picked a different shirt because I didn't pick a different shirt.
Or you even could have. That you even could have picked a different shirt. Like, what?
But if I had picked that other shirt, then wouldn't the shirt that I didn't pick just be the other shirt? And what about all of the other shirts? Like, I don't only have two shirts.
Yeah, but something compelled you. You only have two shirts. Something compelled me to pick this shirt this morning.
So you're saying that if something compels us to make a choice, that negates free will?
Well, I think that that's what the free will is.
Free will is
Who you are, like,
behind the choice,
including all this freaking DNA of like all these people that did whatever. It's like, so you like put that soup together and like all this life experience, mm-hmm. and then it's like, all right, pick out a shirt. I think it's deterministic.
So if I were to choose to do something uncharacteristic on a whim at random. Are you saying
I think if that you put all those inputs into the same function, it would be deterministic, including the whimsy level or whatever.
So what I'm saying is, if we're looking at anything retroactive, it's always going to appear deterministic.
Yeah.
Because that is not reflective of the present.
Yeah, but the future is not certain, which is what our free will is.
Free will lives in the present.
Yes.
Free will does not live in the future. Free will does not live in the past. Yeah. And we don't really have any way to measure present.
Yeah, it's just the moment.
Literally. So, and our measure of time is just our measure of past. 1 second, that's all. That's
I don't know,
past. That's not
it's
now.
Weird to me, too, because I don't know. You talk about, like, I don't know how my generations are going to perceive me, right? My dad is deceased. And so I only have memories of him for the most part, right? Like, obviously, the relationship was hard. You know, but I can recall certain things that he did. And I can recall how I felt about it at the time. I can recall how I felt about it, like, 10 years ago. And I can recall how I felt about it now, like, being a guy with a bunch of kids, you know? Like, and it's just, like, really, it's really freaking interesting to me. I don't know. Like, so a choice like a shirt. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's very interesting to me to see how I can basically, like, literally just change the past based on how I view it. Like, you know how, like, yeah, like if you look at a certain kind of shape and you hold it up from one perspective, it can look like one thing. And then if you tilt it 90 degrees or something, it looks totally different. Like, it's just, like, really interesting to me. So what am I trying to say in relation to free will? I think part of our free will includes retrospecting on past decisions. Like, and again, that's part of, like, the vector that goes into what free will is. Like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say. We might be getting long in the wind here, Colton. We might have to go two.
I might have to hop off here pretty soon.
Okay. Sorry for taking up all your time. Colton
Campbell. Dude, I'm happy to jump back into this part two coming soon.
So what did we talk about on the first Interrobang? We covered free will, God, religion,
police, capitalism, structures of power, capitalist.
And most postal importantly,
workers, arming the postal workers.
Your favorite color.
CC0000.
That's pretty sweet.
Thank you. That's nice.
All right, Colton. It's been real. All
right, I'll talk to you later for part two. It's been very real.
Thanks for joining.
Anytime.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Interrobang.